21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
My shoes are worn out, walking down this same highway. I don't see nothing new, but I feel a lot of change. And I get the strangest feeling as I'm heading for the light.
Well, indeed, that's exactly where all of us are heading, towards the light. This is 21st Century Radio. I'm what's left of Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD hanging out in this part of the universe, or Megaverse, what do you want to call it? Our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Kortner, and our engineer is Noah Dankner. In 1969, the U.S. Air Force issued a statement that read, quote, "No UFO reported, investigated, and evaluated by the Air Force was ever an indication of threat to our national security." Now, this statement is patently false. I'll say that better. False. Yeah. It has been proven untrue by the testimony of many military officers and airmen and documentation of incidents involving UFOs, nuclear weapons, testimonies of which the U.S. Air Force was fully aware. Unidentified details many of those testimonies, some for the first time. As partial justification for its position, the Air Force cites a University of Colorado study that was contracted and paid for by federal funds. Unidentified reveals how this study was actually just another part of the plan to cover up the reality of the UFO phenomenon. Now, for the first time, Unidentified publishes evidence that the investigators for the Colorado study knew about the UFO-related missile shutdown incidents, but did not investigate them or include them in their final report. Robert Salas, or Salas, is that how to pronounce it? I hope so, is a 1964 graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy serving 7 years on active duty. He flew target drones as a weapons controller, commander, and he also commanded intercontinental ballistic missiles as a launch officer and worked as an Air Force missile propulsion engineer on the Titan III program. From 1974 until 1995, he worked for the Federal Aviation Administration, and in 2005 he published the book Faded Giant, which details the UFO incident he witnessed in 1967. Salas has been publicly speaking about this incident at UFO conferences, on radio, and on TV since 1996. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Robert Salas, and congratulations on one of the most important contributions to literature on this most important topic.
Thank you, Dr. Hieronymus, for that introduction. I appreciate the nice comments about my book. It was a labor, it's my second book. The first book, Faded Giant, talked about the incident which you described. Well, I guess you haven't described it quite yet. We can go into that.
Yeah, we will get into that. But, you know, I didn't give the full title. Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon, How World Governments Have Conspired to Conceal Humanity's Biggest Secret, by Robert Salas. New Page Books. We've done a lot of their books. They could do some good books there. Now, can I call you George?
Sure, call me anything you like.
That's what I thought, but I'll still call you Robert anyway.
And then, by the way, the last name is pronounced Salas.
Salas, thank you. Thank you. Now, you note there are two things that you know with certainty about the UFO phenomenon. What are they?
Well, number one, I think I mentioned that I'm certainly convinced that this is a real phenomenon. Real objects are visiting planet Earth from elsewhere, off Earth. So I'm certainly convinced about that after some 20 years and, of course, my own experience. The other thing I mentioned is that there's a part of this phenomenon called the abduction phenomenon, where people are being taken by these entities or beings. We can get into that a little bit more, but that's an area of concern and speculation, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, why did it take you a multi-decade, multi-years to come to terms with these realities?
Well, for one thing, the incident that we're going to talk about at Malmstrom Air Force Base was classified. I was not ever to talk about it. I actually signed a non-disclosure statement stating that I would never speak of this. But I can go into the details a little later on exactly how I was able to decide finally to come forward. And then, of course, even after I went public with this incident, it took time for this to kind of settle in and, become a real part of my consciousness, let's say. Because it is such a phenomenal thing. And, of course, as you noted, I've got engineering degrees, and I've worked as an engineer. I'm a math teacher now, so I'm a real left brainer, and it took me a while for this to settle in.
Well, can you tell us about your March 24th, 1967 UFO encounter while you were in the Air Force?
Sure. So in 1967, I was a missile launch officer. I was part of a two-man crew stationed at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana. It's near Great Falls, Montana. And Montana has, and still has, quite a few sites, active sites, where intercontinental ballistic nuclear-tipped missiles are located. This particular site was near Roy, Montana. It's about 100 miles east. Called Oscar Flight. On March 24th, 1967, we were at Oscar Flight. We had settled in for the evening. We're relieved every 24 hours at that time. So we had relieved the crew and changed over and settled in. And I get a phone call from one of my security guards upstairs. We had about six guards upstairs. He says he's seeing strange lights in the sky and flying very fast, stopping on a dime, reversing course, making 90-degree turns without, banking. They're not aircraft. He said they're just lights, but they're very strange. They're not making any noise. And I even joked with him that, you mean UFOs? And because we had actually had reports in the local newspaper of people seeing things, lights in the sky, around Great Falls. At any rate, I wasn't particularly interested in that call. I kind of hung up on him, and then, but it was unusual because these guys are very professional. And he calls back 5 minutes later. This time, he's screaming into the phone. He's very upset, frightened. He's got all the guards out with their weapons drawn. And he said, "Sir, we're looking at a glowing red object about 40, 50 feet in diameter. It's pulsating red light. It's just hovering over the front gate." And that's how he described it to me. But he was very frightened. He asked me what he should do. Of course, I was in shock. I didn't know what to think. But obviously, he considered it a very serious situation. So I, of course, told him, use whatever force necessary to secure the facility. And then we hung up. I went to tell my commander. I stopped for a moment and looked at our status board and our missiles. I don't know why I did that, but I went over to my commander and woke him up, started to tell him about the phone calls. And all of a sudden, the missiles did start shutting down. We were getting bells and whistles going off, lights going off. We went from a green status or a go status to a no-go. And of course, our job was to keep those missiles on alert, ready to go, if given the order. So we went through our procedures. We queried the system. It was guidance and control system failure on each of the missiles. So we had an inertial guidance system, meaning that the system was very sensitive to the proper alignment to direction, you know, for launch on target. So that system was upset, and while this object was still overhead, so I concluded that this object instigated that upset of those missiles. He called the command post, turned to me, and said the same thing happened at another flight. Now, at the time, I thought he meant that evening, but later I found out that this was about 8 days before, and that was the Echo flight incident. It's another flight of 10 missiles similar to ours, but they had the same situation, UFOs overhead, reported by security guards and maintenance people, and all 10 of their missiles went down. So within 8 days, we lost 20 missiles to while UFOs were overhead.
So that statement that no UFO reported, investigated, and evaluated by the Air Force was ever an indication of threat to our national security can't possibly be true.
Completely false. Completely false. And of course, the Air Force knew about it. One of the documents we got back was from Strategic Air Command headquarters. When we, we got under the Freedom of Information Act, we got some documents from the Air Force, and it stated that this is of grave concern to our command, and they went into the thought that nobody could figure out what had happened here. So, yes, the Air Force did not tell the truth in that statement.
Was there an official investigation of this incident?
There were actually two concurrent investigations. The Air Force asked the Boeing company, which had the main support contract for the system, to conduct an investigation. And then the Air Force was doing their own internal classified or secret investigation. So the results that we got back were from the Boeing investigation. We made contact with the team leader, and by the name of Robert Kaminsky, who reported to us that, and this was after I started investigating this. This was, 1996, 97. And he stated that they went through every conceivable failure mode that they could think of and could find nothing that should have caused this. Just to go into a little bit more detail, what this object would have had to do was send a signal through 60 feet of earth and concrete. We were underground, and we had all the systems underground and the cabling systems going to each of the missiles separately. So they would have had to send a signal under through 60 feet of earth and concrete and then penetrate triply shielded cables, triply shielded for EMI, and then upset a particular piece of equipment on the missile called the logic coupler. And even the Air Force admitted that this was highly, highly unlikely. So the results of the secret Air Force investigation were never able to retrieve from the Air Force.
Let's touch on secrecy just a little bit. There's just so many things that are really important in this work. You note that extreme secrecy hinders our working cooperatively in resolving such problems as nuclear weapons and global warming. Why does extreme secrecy prevent our resolving such issues as both of those, nuclear weapons and global warming, especially when you've noted that there were at least two times in which 10 missiles were affected in this kind of way. That's quite a coincidence, isn't it?
I go into a lot of detail as to how this cover-up was done by the Air Force. First of all, we were not able to talk about it. The day after, we had to report to our squadron commander's office, and they basically wanted us to sign this document, a non-disclosure statement that we'd never, ever talk about this. So that was the start of the cover-up on this aspect of it. We were never debriefed on any of the investigations ongoing. A lot of the guards that saw these objects were shipped off to other bases. So that's another way the Air Force handled this. They separate the witnesses from each other. The reason this was covered up in particular was because the Condon investigation was ongoing. That started in 1966 and was ongoing in 1967. Didn't finish up till the end of 68. But, of course, the Air Force did not want the Condon investigators to get wind of these incidents, because the purpose of the Condon investigation was really a whitewash. It was really an attempt to get the Air Force out of the business of having to respond to the public about these sightings of UFOs and what it all meant. So that was the reason for the secrecy there, and it's been that way since. The Air Force has never acknowledged that this is a real phenomenon, and even the President of the United States hasn't acknowledged it. We had requested of the current President Obama to release information regarding UFOs, and we got the answer back that there's no evidence that this phenomenon exists or that we've been visited by extraterrestrial craft. Not saying, of course, how they came to that determination, but that's just the basic statement they gave us.
Well, just that, we got time out on the playing field here, and we'll be right back after that. Our guest is Robert Salas, Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon, How World Governments Have Conspired to Conceal Humanity's Biggest Secret, New Page Books. Robert's website is spiralgalaxy.org. Find all the links we mentioned on the air at 21stcenturyradio.com. And hey, we now have a growing YouTube channel where you can listen to previous shows and see some of our video productions. So go to youtube.com/21st Century Radio. And that's youtube.com/21st Century Radio.
Hi, this is Richard Dolan, author of UFOs and the National Security State, and you are listening to 21st Century Radio and Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Oh, welcome back, friends. Our guest is Robert Salas, Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon, How World Guests Have Conspired to Conceal Humanity's Biggest Secret, New Page Books. Robert's website is spiralgalaxy.org. Find all the links that we mention on the air at 21stcenturyradio.com. Robert, you believe that one of the first important books on the subject of UFOs is Captain Edward Ruppelt's The Report of Unidentified Flying Objects, published in 1956. I remember my struggle with that. Boy, I was so excited that we actually had somebody that paid attention to research with Mr. Ruppelt and the stuff that he went through. Tell us why his book was so important.
Well, Captain Ruppelt was assigned head of Project Blue Book at a time, a pretty exciting time. You know, we in 1952 there was a flap, UFO flap over Washington D.C. area, as a result of that, the Air Force had to take this subject seriously in the public domain. They actually had a press conference and talked about these objects, and they were going to investigate and on and on. And so when Ruppelt took over in the early 50s, the powers that be in the government were struggling on how to deal with this. So, and Ruppelt knew, because he was there before he took over Blue Book, he was working on foreign technology projects, you know, with foreign aircraft, things like that. Mm-hmm. And he knew from talking to the person that was running Blue Book, precursor of Blue Book was Project Sign, and then it became Project Grudge, and then Blue Book. But he knew that there was a report called the Estimate of the Situation, which was had concluded that the phenomenon was real, and that the Air Force ought to take up and study it seriously. And so this group, I think they were part of the Project Sign group, actually presented this to the top Air Force generals. And so he goes into great detail on how this was done, and he's the one that actually brings up in his book that there must be a cover-up going on, because they had so many really good reports from pilots and other people that it couldn't be ignored. So he was really the first one that put out the idea that, this is a real phenomenon, and it's being covered up by the Air Force. So it was a very important book.
Why do you believe the public has a right to know the truth about the UFOs, especially the UFO crash at Roswell?
Yeah, well, again, like I mentioned, I'm certainly convinced that these objects are intelligently controlled, and they are off-Earth objects. In other words, they're not manufactured here on Earth. And by simply the description I gave you of what was reported to us, these things do pretty fantastic speeds and do amazing things that even current aircraft can't do. And this was back in 67. So what's the impact of that? Well, if we are being visited by beings from elsewhere, and they have the ability, certainly the ability, to shut down our missiles, then they've got some very advanced technology. And this is important, certainly. We all need to be part of the conversation as to what to do about this. Some people think that these beings have a kind nature, maybe a helpful. They're trying to help us, and other people believe quite the opposite, that they're here to take over. So, but at any rate, we've got a secret group. I'm convinced, again, a secret cabal, and this is an international group that is holding these secrets and is dealing with them without our involvement, without the public involvement. And that's one of the reasons I risked coming forward with my story, even though it was classified.
Well, we're going to return a little later on, maybe next hour, to the cabal there. There were so many important things within your book. This is the kind of book that should be in every high school, every college, every university. And the reason why I'm saying that is because, especially the way you reason why the people have the right to know about these things in a democracy. Because in a democracy, we are supposed to have that right. It seems that it's been kind of taken away from us.
Yeah.
Now, Was it true that the witnesses to Roswell were threatened with their lives and lives of their children and even grandchildren if they spoke about what they knew?
These were the reports. I referenced a good book by Don Schmidt. Called Witness to Roswell. Don Schmidt, there's a co-author.
Carrie.
And they've interviewed hundreds, literally hundreds of witnesses. And these people have reported that, yes, after the Roswell incident, they were visited, many of them were visited by government individuals who told them to keep quiet and actually threatened them, threatened their lives, threatened the lives of their children, grandchildren, things like that. Whoever ordered the cover-up was taking this very seriously.
Evidently. No wonder people didn't want to come out and discuss this.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you have a family. My God, that's really, pardon me, but I just feel that that's really hitting below the belt. There are some things here that just don't seem not only illegal but unethical. Well, certainly unethical, but maybe illegal. In regard to the extremes of interrogations and control of witnesses, you touched also on the Bentwater base. The UK incident in 1980 was particularly insidious. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, in around this time, Christmas time, 1980. There was a report of a light landing in the forest outside Bentwater's base, which is near Woodbridge. I think that's the name of the town, Woodbridge.
I believe that's true, sir.
In the UK, we had a NATO base there, Bentwater's base. The US was using, it did have nuclear weapons. We've finally determined that there were nuclear weapons based there. But this light was investigated by a couple of the airmen, a sergeant and an airman, went out into the forest, and these witnesses reported seeing an object landed. Other incidents happened in the next couple of days. So this happened over 3 days. There was a tape recording on the third day by Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt. You may have heard of him.
Oh, certainly. I spent some time with him.
Okay. And other witnesses. So there were a multitude of witnesses in this incident. When these witnesses were interrogated or debriefed, however you want to put it, a lot of them reported being drugged during interrogation. Now, there's maybe a couple of reasons for this. One may be to try to confuse these witnesses in some way or to put in false memories, things like that. But, you know, other than that, I see no purpose in drugging people who try to find the facts of something like this. But a lot of them do report that. There was evidence that people from NSA and also MI5 and Office of Naval Intelligence all participated in these interrogations. So, yeah, there was, again, these kinds of extraordinary means of interrogating people.
It sure was. Well, it's kind of interesting that was near. Well, I think that was very close to Christmas Eve.
Yes.
We're moving towards that. And also, here, just a couple of days ago, on December 9th, the Senate Intelligence Committee condemned the CIA over torture. Do you have any comments on that assessment in regards to that kind of condemnation?
Well, to me, it validates the idea that the CIA or intelligence agencies like the CIA can operate without oversight, without effective oversight, and who knows what other activities are going on behind the backs of Congress, and our inability to really monitor what they're doing.
And that's true.
And of course, it's been brought out that the CIA lied to the Senate committee that was investigating this. And so how, we have a real serious job here to try to figure out how to go about trusting our own CIA again.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, before the Gulf War, they lied even to General Powell, I think it was, about weapons of mass destruction, or and so this is a very serious thing, I think, that we're all going to have to look into as far as how do we trust our intelligence people, because for a long time it's been evident that oversight is really not there. It's not effective.
Yeah, when you say a long time, it sure has been a long time. As a matter of fact, in regards to Mr. Cheney, there's a book that's been put out called A Terrible Mistake, The Murder of Frank Olson and the CIA's Secret Cold War Experiments. Really mm-hmm. covers this well. When I get some of these 800-page books, it takes me a while to go through them, and they just tear me to pieces. They really do. And especially because this is the man that really was, he was vice president, but he actually was, and it's been admitted that he basically was calling the shots. This is, in my opinion, not a very kind person. I guess it could be. Kindness
right.
isn't the key to everything, but he certainly isn't. We need to take another break here on 21st Century Radio, and again, Robert Salas, unidentified, the UFO phenomenon, how world governments have conspired to conceal humanity's biggest secret, new page books. Robert's website is spiralgalaxy.org. And again, you can find all the links that we mention on the air at 21stcenturyradio.com. Also go to youtube.com, 21st Century Radio.
This is Tom Carey, co-author of Witness to Roswell and Inside the Real Area 51, listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Be sure to listen every week because this is where you hear all the good stuff that you want to know but you don't hear about.
Thank you. Boy, when was the last time he was on? Just a couple of months ago, was he not? I hope so. Oh, okay. Well, welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm just sitting here talking, guys. The book, of course, is Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon, How World Governments Have Conspired to Conceal Humanity's Biggest Secrets, secret new page books. Robert's website is spiralgalaxy.org, and you can find all the links we mentioned on the air at 21stcenturyradio.com. How important is this book? Let me tell you how important we think this book is. It's this important to us. We want you to buy this book. As a matter of fact, we'd like you to buy a couple of them, especially for Christmas. If you can prove to us that you have purchased a copy of this book, you can have any book that I or my wife had written absolutely free. We will send it to you gratis. That's how important this work is. This is the kind of book that, in my opinion, and I mentioned this earlier, should be read from high school into the colleges and universities to prepare the generations for truth as to what this is going on. Okay, now, that's all you got to do. Just keep your receipt. Prove it to us. Buy a couple of them, because look, if you looked at my book, and I'm going to, as usual, I write all over this book. You wouldn't even, Robert, you wouldn't even recognize your book anymore. It's become a kind of an encyclopedia with many different colors, many, you know, because I just enjoyed it so much. And this is really a book that can teach, and it tells the truth. Of course, I'm biased, but I tell you that I'm biased. Now, okay, there are some real other important issues I want to talk about before we get to next hour, of course. But after your graduation from the Air Force Institute of Technology, an upperclassman who may have been aware of your UFO experience, who wanted you to consider another possible assignment after you're receiving a call ordering you to report to the base psychiatrist's office. You refused to go. Why did you not want to see that psychiatrist?
Yeah, that was a very unusual thing that happened. That's why I put it in my book, because, of course, this happened at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. This was June of 69. The Air Force had just come out with that statement you read initially. But obviously, the Air Force was not going to drop the UFO investigations. They were going to continue them, but out of public sight. They were going to have a secret program, which they've had ongoing since. This person approached me. He was a person I knew from the Air Force Academy, and they said he had an interesting job for me, and I said I was just there to get my degree. And then my next assignment, he said, well, we'll talk later. And after that, I get this call from the base psychiatrist's office wanting to see me, and actually ordered me to come to the base psychiatrist and talk to him. I had not complained about any mental problems or had no reason to go see him. But I did show up and asked for an explanation. I asked to see the psychiatrist to come out and tell me why I was there, and he wouldn't do it. He wanted me to go back to his office. So I suspect that if I had gone back, I refused, by the way. I just refused to do that, and I just walked out of there. But if I had gone back there, I think a couple of things may have happened. One, they might have tried to recruit me into this secret world of UFOs since I had had that experience. So that's another way they handle witnesses, is they try to involve them, read them in, so to speak, into the secrets, and that way they're more embroiled in it and are more obligated to keep a secret. Or the other thing that might have happened is they would have gotten out of me this incident that happened in 67, and then that would have gone on my record and possibly affected my career, etc. So
that's what I think would have happened.
Right.
The second one, but you, in the past, correct me if I'm wrong, Robert, but I think you did see a psychiatrist for some other work, right?
No, not a psychiatrist. I have spoken with Hypnotherapist,
that's right.
Yeah, counselors on hypnotherapy, yeah.
Because I found, I worked, well, under Johns Hopkins Hospital, I've worked with a psychiatrist for about 5 years after I had a poltergeist experience, and my, at that time, being a logical positivist, an agnostic, who had didn't believe that there was anything else except the physical world, Robert, really.
Right.
Shook me down, and I it made a very big difference in my life, turned my whole life upside down, as you can imagine. And of course, fortunately, I thank Johns Hopkins Hospital for doing it all for free. That certainly saved me tens of thousands of bucks over 5.5 years. So thank you, Johns Hopkins. Why did you decide then soon after to resign your commission from the Air Force?
Yeah, 1971, after I had worked on the Titan III program for a while, the Vietnam War was dragging on. And, of course, I had gotten a lot of feedback from some of my classmates who had served over there. And
many of my classmates didn't come back. I was just disgusted with the Vietnam War, and that was the primary reason I decided to leave the Air Force. That was my only way of really protesting. So I resigned.
Well, another great insight you have here, in my opinion, it's a great insight. You state that the end result of secret CIA operations would be the senseless and bloody Vietnam War, and that 30 years later, history would essentially be repeated in the run-up to the Bush-era Iraq War. Right. So was this just by chance, or was this kind of a planned war?
You're talking about Vietnam?
Vietnam and of course, Iraq.
Right. Well, I can speak more to the Vietnam War. There was a long history that I go into prior to our involvement, where the CIA was involved in setting up a puppet government in the South, and of course they didn't want the communists to take over the entirety of Vietnam. Vietnam had to go through an election process after the French left to try to unify the country, and the U.S. government and CIA were concerned that it would go communist, of course. So there was a lot of shenanigans there, and all this, of course, came out in the Pentagon Papers, which are very telling about, much of the information I got in there in my book came from basically what was revealed in the Pentagon Papers. But, we had heard about our involvement in 1960, if you can believe that. And it was about this time of year, near Christmas of 1960, when we had a classified briefing. I was at the Air Force Academy about U.S. advisors in Vietnam. But that turned out to be, just a precursor to our full involvement in that war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there are so many directions we need to go to next hour, and I was going to touch on those Pentagon Papers because they're far more important than I ever thought they were. Because I don't know, what was the positive aspect of the Pentagon Papers for our country? That is.
The Pentagon Papers talked about, the fact that they were released, even though they were released, Daniel Ellsberg just basically walked out of his office with them and started releasing them to, I think it was the New York Times, and they started publishing them, and it told the truth about what was actually going on in Vietnam. And of course, I was hearing about this before those papers were published in 1965. I was hearing about some of the activities that were going on there from my own classmates that were coming back and were talking about. But it was very, very telling as to how involved we were in really making that war happen.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I hope we have just about 4 minutes, less than that, about 3 minutes left in this hour. Next hour, I wanted to focus on the U.S. intelligence community, which consists of, I couldn't believe this, Robert, 17 organizations. My Lord, it's almost as if every agency's got to keep things secret. And we'll talk about what that results in over a long period of time. Why do you believe that disclosure must happen to preserve our democracy?
Well, it must be revealed that there is, in fact, a cadre of people, probably in intelligence agencies in our government, not only our government, but the governments all over the world, that are exchanging information, collecting information, dealing with information about this phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon. And these people are operating outside of government. And these are very powerful secrets. Of course, some of the information they're getting from their studies of recovered aircraft, recovered craft, and probably bodies, it's got to be dynamite information that can be used, for various reasons and commercial applications, and for political reasons.
Yeah.
So these things are going on behind our back, out of the realm of public awareness and perception, even, and it's being intentionally kept dark from us by ridicule and by other means, disinformation efforts.
Well, there's also something that this is too much of a loaded question to ask at the end here, but I'm going to do it anyway. Darn, I'm breaking the law, even though we got 1 minute, so we can start now and get into it later next hour. One of the detriments of this whole thing, and UFOs and disclosure, is all the stories that are being told without any, that in my opinion, lack credibility, and this has been exceedingly harmful. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely true. No
question. Let's focus on that when we come back, because as much as I love the History Channel, they sure are messing things up, especially when it deals with this particular area. We'll be back with our guest, Robert Salas. Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon, How World Governments Have Conspired to Conceal Humanity's Biggest Secret, new page books. Robert's website is spiralgalaxy.org, and find all the links we mentioned on the air at 21stcenturyradio.com.
Talk around the clock
and breaking news now
on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
This is a Fox News Alert. I'm Paul Stevens.